Welcome to the Novice Hunter Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Belknap. In this podcast, I search social media for experienced hunters that offer tips and advice to beginner hunters, such as myself, of how to be successful in the field. Whether you're duck hunting in the fall, turkey hunting in the spring, or looking for elk during the rut, this podcast will help you get started from buying equipment to scouting areas and to find your next successful hunt.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Braxton.
How's it going?
Great. How are you? Finally got you on here on the Novice Hunter Podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So I'm joined by my coworker and friend, Aaron Dixon.
Hi, Braxton.
Hey, how's it going, Aaron?
Good. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Good.
So just to give the audience a little bit of background, I just reached out to Braxton via Instagram. I was watching his stories, following his Instagram page, and you know, I just thought it'd be fun to talk to you for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad you reached out. It's awesome to feel like my work on my Instagram appreciated by someone. It means a lot.
Well, perfect. Braxton, how about you give us a little bit of an intro for us?
Yeah, so my name's Braxton, and kind of the page I have on Instagram is Haxton, and my wife's name is actually Haley, and so that's how Haxton came about. It's Haley and Braxton put together, and we kind of just shared the passion of hunting and the outdoors, and that's kind of where that sparked, and it's always been my dream to just continue to share my experiences out in the wild, out in the hills, hunting, fishing, scouting, and everything like that. And so I've kind of tried to create my own page to share that with others.
Well, great. If you would like, you could do a little, I know you have a sponsor. So if you want to do a little plug for your sponsor, you can do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm teamed up actually with Scout the Hunt. It's a trail cam company that runs, they have well over 1,000 trail cameras over the state of Utah, Nevada, Arizona, Colorado. And it's the first visual data platform that you're able to have access to all of these pictures, and just kind of do your study, without having to set up trail cameras. And it's just kind of based off, different areas. You don't have the exact location. And so that way no one can steal your secret spot if you're one of the team members like myself. And you can actually save a little bit of extra money with my discount code Haxton. That's H-A-X-E-N. And then also that same discount code with PhoneScope, the digital digiscoping is what they call it. And teamed up with them. And I've got my website as well, HaxtonHunt.com. And I got a few hats on there. My inventory's a little low right now, but working on getting that to be built up over the next little while. And yeah, that's me.
I like your hat. I want to get one.
Yeah, I'll have to send one over to you.
I'd love to do a little promoting for you.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So I was watching your stories and I saw this new PhoneScope product. Can you, it's more for rifles, right? Instead of spotting scope?
Yeah. It's called, what's the product called? Scoped Vision is what it is, their thing. And so what it actually is you're able to hook your smartphone onto your rifle scope, but it's actually on the side of your rifle scope. They've kind of got a system going in with some mirrors where it's filming through your scope. But you're still able to look through it. And so it's been really awesome. The shots that I've seen people out there coyote hunting and whatnot, that they're able to actually film through their scope with the crosshairs and everything. And so it's made filming your own hunts and things like that much easier and better. And And yeah, I gave it a test over at the Hunting and Conservation Expo in Salt Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. That thing is incredible. I need to order one for myself, but I don't have one myself quite yet.
So you said you put on the side of your scope, so you still have the visibility look through your scope to make the shot, but then you can, that's your phone's on the side, so you can record, right? Is that what you're explaining?
Yes, that is correct. And there's kind of like a sun shield that kind of comes over to your eye to make it, you know, even better looking through a scope. Kind of sealing off any light coming through that can bother your eye or cause any glare on the glass right there near your eye.
Cool. So on something like that, is that scope specific, or is it just kind of a generic piece that is supposed to fit a range of scopes?
Yeah, it's actually a generic piece. It'll fit basically almost any scope. They've kind of come out with a new design plan that's adjustable depending on the size of your scope, and so it makes it really easy and adjustable for multiple guns and scopes that you have, so that way you're not trying to, you know, buy different adapters for separate guns that you have. And yeah, it'll hook onto anything.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really awesome thing. I know that they've kind of done a little bit with the military with that as well, helping, you know, see visual data on a phone or on a camera that way. So it's actually really awesome. I'm really impressed on how they executed that.
Yeah. Well, great. So, Braxton, can you give us a little bit more, I guess, give us you said you're from Southern Utah. Can you give us a little bit about the current hunting season and what are your plans are for the next 3-4 months?
Yeah, so right now I live in Southern Utah, and it's actually the general season turkey season right now, and I'm working on getting my wife a tag, and we're gonna have her go get her very first turkey. I just finished and wrapped up my hunt. I actually drew up for the limited entry turkey hunt down here in Southern Utah.
How many tags are in that hunt?
What was that?
Sorry? How many tags are given out for that hunt?
I'm not sure. I think it's just a few hundred that are given out for this hunt, for the limited entry for the whole state of Utah. So I was pretty lucky to draw that. It took me, I think I had 2 or 3 years to get that.
You guys' hunting regulations and stuff like that in Utah, and your tags are, there's so many people and so many hunters. It's so hard to get any type of hunt.
Yeah. Especially with those limited hunts. I know I've got 8 or 9 years of putting in for a limited entry mule deer tag for what's called the Pontagon unit, as well as the Henry Mountains. And there's some really, really big giant class mule deer out there. And, I think it takes,
I was gonna say, just for the audience, kind of give us a geographical region for Utah for that location.
Okay. Yeah, the Pontagon, if anyone knows kind of where Kanab, Utah is, it's more southeast of Utah rather than where I'm at in the southwestern part. And it's just kind of a desert. It's red dirt. And then the Henry Mountains is actually over above Lake Powell over there, wow. Even a little bit more east.
Cool.
And so... yeah, there's some amazing deer out there. On the Henrys, there's actually a herd of buffalo, wild buffalo. So you can actually get a bison tag and go out there as well.
Is that a once-in-a-lifetime tag?
Yes. Yeah, it is. And this year's my first year putting in for that. So give it about 30 years, 40 years, and maybe I'll get it.
So is it – I know in some certain hunts in certain states what they do is – you put in one, and then the next year they give you 2 entries, and then 3 entries, and 4 entries. Is it similar in Utah, or is it just 1 entry per year?
It's the same here in Utah. So if I put in for 5 years and I'm not drawing out, then that 6th year is when I'd have 6. We call them bonus points.
Okay.
In Utah, and so those bonus points help you have that higher chance and probability of drawing a special tag. And it's even that way with general hunts. just like, you know, a general archery deer tag. In some states you can go buy it over the counter, but here in Utah it's a draw. So sometimes you don't draw out and it's disappointing. So it you gotta go to another state sometimes, or you can also get like a over the counter elk tag here. Right. That I usually get every year for it's called the Archer's Choice. Depending on what unit you're in, you can either shoot a spike or a cow, or if you're in any bull unit, you can get at any bull that you see. So,
you need to get you up to Idaho, man. So many regulations.
I know.
In Utah, you get, you know, here in Idaho, we can get over the counter everything, I think. Is that right, Aaron?
Except for antelope.
Yeah, antelope you have to draw for.
Yep.
But last year, my brother drew a muzzleloader antelope tag, and I think in 51, 52. He saw a lot, but he never got close enough.
Yeah.
Is there any muzzleloader hunts in Utah?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot. There's anything from mule deer, elk, antelope, bison.
Wow. That's cool.
That was how I got my first deer. So that's where my addiction started. Was my first ever deer was a little spike. Just a tiny little buck, and got him with the muzzleloader on the last day, and been hunting ever since.
So what's your opinion on the point system? I know that's an open debate right now in Idaho, and they've asked the sportsmen a number of times what their preference is. I personally do not like the point system. I think I see the advantage where if you've been putting in for a special hunt for a number of years, you get extra chances, but then so does everybody else. And so basically, I don't know if your odds improve. In fact, I've even seen things where your odds look like they go down with the point system.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally controversy with that subject here. And I mean, there's people that I know that have 15 points for a limited entry elk tag. And then here comes this kid that puts in on a second year and draws the tag. And so it's no guarantee type thing. And so it upsets a lot of people that, you know, have been putting in for 15, 20 years and still haven't seen any results. And I mean, it costs $10 every time you put in for a tag, but, it's beneficial in some ways, and then it's not in other ways. I personally think, you know, it'd be best, in my opinion, if everyone had, you know, the same chance every single time, because then, I mean, just like the kid that came in on a second year and took a tag, he got lucky. But if everyone had that, you know, that opportunity and that probability of drawing a tag, I feel like would be more beneficial for the hunters. Just because, I mean, even if you're putting in for 20 years, you don't have that guarantee right. to get that tag.
And I guess that's how it is here in Idaho. It's everybody gets one entry. And if you try to do multiple entries, then I think you get kicked out of the entire system and you lose your chances for drawing anything for that species. But everybody's on level playing ground. But that being said, I also know guys, they've been applying for a particular area for 20, 30 years and they still haven't drawn. And me as an example, there's been a deer and an elk hunt. The first year I applied, I drew, and they were hard areas to draw in. And so some people get lucky, other people don't. And I don't know. It's an open debate for sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. And this is all great information for, you know, the whole intent of this podcast is to help, you know, beginner hunters like myself learn more about hunting odds, harvesting odds, you know, obviously how tags work and how tags are administered or how they're drawn. So this is great information. Braxton, I recently watched your Instagram stories. I think it was actually a video you posted on your Instagram. And it's a pretty pretty funny story. Could you relate the story of your friend who got the turkey with if I'm not mistaken, a metal folding chair? Is that correct?
That is correct. you did see that video, correct. That was one for the books, that's for sure. What had happened is there's three of us, and none of us had ever been turkey hunting. and we were informed of a decent spot here in southern Utah to go check out. It's just public land. So I had my shotgun. I had my bullets, my shells. And then my two friends, one had the shotgun and then one had the shells. So instead of meeting up in the same town that we're in, we all met up in the mountains. And on the way up there, it's just basically just a barren dirt road, nothing really out there. And one of my buddies that just had the shotgun didn't have the shells. He's driving and he looks over on the side of the road and there's a turkey, big tom with like a 10-inch beard, just literally being attacked by an eagle.
Oh,
just,
wow.
Just the eagle's going in for a good turkey meal. And so my friend, he looks in his car for the only thing that he had, and he literally just had a metal folding chair that you would, you know, go to some banquet and sit at type of chair. I mean, I don't know why he had that chair, but or how this crossed his mind, but that was his choice of weapon to get his turkey. I don't know if it's a legal weapon or not, but I don't think they have that stated in any rule books. And so he chased after that tom. Eagle flew away, and he pinned it down and finished it off with a metal chair.
You know, as you relate the story, it just reminds me of when I was younger and I used to watch wrestling with The Rock and Hulk Hogan. You know, they beat each other with chairs all the time. That's what I'm envisioning right now.
That's exactly how I pictured it, because he sent me a video or a picture of himself with this big tom, just a 10-inch beard, and he's like, guys, look what I just killed this thing with. I'm like, what in the world are you doing?
Oh my goodness.
Sure enough, he tagged it, and I ran into him the other day, and he said he still got that beard and fan hanging on the wall. So
does he have the chair mounted next to it?
I think he should if he doesn't. That's one where we tell people the story and they're just like, yeah, right, there's no way that happened. I mean, that's too good to be true. An eagle attacking a turkey and you kill it with a chair. But I can relate that way. I actually killed a muskrat. I was doing some trapping, and there's a muskrat in this pasture that my friend has. The only source of weapon I had was a big black metal flashlight.
Oh.
So I chased after that sucker, and sure enough, I had a pelt later that week.
Nice.
But
that's interesting. Whenever we go fishing, when we go, it's like bass fishing in like American Falls. American Falls is a stretch of the Snake River in southern Idaho, and there's a lot of great smallmouth bass that are there, good fishing there. And so whenever we catch a fish, we would take a sledgehammer to its head and then, you know, take it home to cook and eat.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Oh man, I still can't get over that picture. Imagine if you filmed that. I would love to see that on film.
I know.
Oh my goodness.
If someone was sitting in the woods and filming that thing and they're listening, please share that with the world.
So, Rexon, you're also, I saw one of your YouTube videos. This is a month or two ago. And you were describing, it looks like you were trying to do a video of, you've purchased different bows throughout your life, and you've kind of did a progression of each one. Can you give us a little bit of how you started bow hunting? What do you hunt with a bow, and then what's your plans for this year with a bow?
Yeah, so archery kind of had a spark in my life. I was about 10 years old. My dad actually was a big archer all growing up, and so I saved up my pretty pennies and purchased my first bow off eBay for, I think, a whopping $200, and just had that thing, went on multiple mule deer hunts here in Utah, and just the chase of having to get so close and personal with these animals is kind of where the addiction of archery started for me. So throughout the years, I obviously, you know, would save up some more money and purchase more expensive, better bows, still on the lower end, just being a young kid, not being able to, you know, purchase something of, you know, as nice as they get. And last year, 2 years ago, is kind of when I really started getting into the technical side of it. So I purchased a Hoyt Defiant when that first came out. It was the aluminum version. It was the 32 axle to axle size. And that's when I just really began to not only get into archery hunting with that, but also just archery itself and target shooting and stuff. And I hadn't really done any target shooting in the past. I maybe done a little bit at my local archery shop here. And I just began to love it. And I would just set goals and say, you know what, I'm just going to get a mule deer this year with my bow. So I've gotten, I think, 4 or 5 mule deer with my bow, and set the goal like, all right, I'm now going to go for distance and target shooting. And so right now, I mean, I'm trying to go out further, but right now I'm getting good at 200 yards with my current bow that I have. And the goal is to double, if not more, that distance. And I basically have just grown to love, basically, it's just like an intimate experience being so close and personal with these animals. And I've gotten into herds of elk where I've been 5-10 yards from big bull elk, and unfortunately I only had spike tags in those moments. And so
dang, of course, right?
That's how it works. I never get to see a spike, but sure enough, a big 6x6 300 inch bull will walk 5 feet from you and get the heart pounding. And it's just the craziest experience. I mean, rifle hunting is one thing, but to get that close and to have to get that close to these like giant majestic animals is just kind of my addiction, is just, you know, get in close and set those goals. And this year I set the goal to get a turkey with my bow. I actually have the new Hoyt Redworks.
Ooh.
And that bow is just, it's incredible. It's amazing. I would sell that to anyone. It is expensive.
That's the carbon bow, carbon version.
Yeah, that's that carbon bow. And the only way I was able to afford it is someone ran into my car and I used the insurance claim. So
that's a true sportsman, so, right there.
Yeah, there you go. Dedication, I would call that.
My wife's like, are you going to fix your car? I'm like, no, why would I fix it? It still drives. So I drive around a dented car and call it good.
Nice.
But yeah, I was able to have a successful archery turkey hunt. And there's times where I'd go out and there'd be 25, 30 mile an hour winds and snow was pounding down. It was rainy. It was muddy. It was just a heck of a hunt for me with the weather. And I kept wanting to refer back to my shotgun because I knew, you know, in the wind, those BBs aren't going to be flying to the side. And I just kind of held hold of my goal of getting it with the bow. And sure enough, last light of an evening last week, I was able to connect on, it was an old Tom. He only had like a 4-inch beard, but he was pretty old. And I think he's going to be good to slap on the smoker and have a good dinner.
Nice. Fun.
But yeah, my goal is to continue with the archery. On my YouTube, I kind of do a little bit of tutorials on my bows and kind of show the differences, like you were saying, Jeff, on the differences between my first bow I purchased, which was really cheap, and then the second one and the third one that are, you know, mid-range prices, and then get a little more expensive with these later ones that I've had and just been more passionate and sacrificed to be able to get the best of the best for myself and have that confidence in shooting and being able to go out hunting and things that way.
Well, great. Aaron, you have a bow.
I do.
That's just I haven't heard your setup. So what's your, what do you have for a setup?
So my bow's a little bit older. I'm looking to upgrade, hopefully this year, might be next year, but I'm shooting an Alpine. It's an Alpine Silverado. And
sounds like a truck.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. But it's actually, I guess it's actually made over here in Eastern Idaho. They were outfitted out of Alpine, Wyoming, which is right on Wyoming border. And so it's a local brand, and it was a mid-range bow. And the bow I used before then, it was an old bow, probably from the 70s, and it was an old Martin bow.
And was it a compound?
It was a compound, but I upgraded. It was in 2008, and I was like, oh man, night and day difference. Why did I wait so long? and I probably do to upgrade again after seeing what some of my other buddies are shooting and then shooting their bows. There is huge difference between what's coming out now versus what was 10 years ago. And so, and I guess you really feel it when you start hiking the mountains and you're carrying your bow, just every extra ounce adds up over time. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah,
it's a great bow. In fact, I'll probably always keep it as a secondary backup in case I have an accident mm-hmm. when I'm hunting. It's awesome, but it is heavier. It probably weighs a pound or two heavier than anyone else's bow that I hunt with.
Right.
And so just holding it in your arm all day, it just starts that up.
I just recently purchased a Cabela's Dash. It's a really, the way they market it online, it's like for someone who's 12 years old, but the poundage range is all the way to 70. So I think I'm okay with that. So I originally had a PSE. That was from the early 80s. And it had those tiny little cams on it, yeah. You know, like the size of a silver dollar. And the big old, the limbs were pretty much like wood, you know, yeah. Flexible wood. I still have it. I could use it for bow fishing if I wanted to, but I'm thinking I'm going to sell it.
Four foot long.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. Yeah. It would be a pain to carry around. My brother's has one very similar to it. And he's been a couple times, but he hasn't gotten elk yet. So, and that's what I want to do this year, Braxton, is I want to go during the rut for some bull elk, early experience, what you were talking about a minute ago, you know, being there up close, 10, 15 yards of these bulls and, you know, experience that environment of, you know, the rut between bulls and cows.
Yeah, that's an experience, you'll never forget, especially the first time getting in on them that close. I mean, I can remember vividly the first time that I ever called in a bull, and it was probably only a 200 inch bull. And even if I was able to shoot him, I probably would have missed by a few hundred yards because I was shaking so bad.
I know what you mean. I missed mine in early December last year. It was a cow elk, but I was shaking pretty good.
That's what it takes, is just getting used to that buck fever. And that's a real thing that some people don't, I think some people don't realize that it's a real thing. It happens. And sure enough, it'll mess up a shot. And I always try to tell people that I teach and things that way with archery, is just, you know, put them in a situation, take them out rabbit hunting. That's kind of one way that I helped buck fever that way with myself. Is I'd go shoot rabbits with my bow, and even with the rabbit, I'd still get super excited, and it would help calm my nerves and everything that way, and teach me how to just take big deep breaths before a shot and concentrate on my anchor points, the positioning of my hand on the riser, and things that way.
Right.
You know, I just want to say, I think that's something that's overlooked a lot of times with archery hunting, is how technical it really is. I mean, just like you said, if you have your wrist twist just a little bit, that changes the impact. And I guess I found that out firsthand at a close range shot with a white-tailed deer here a couple of years ago. And we have extra deer tags for depredation issues that you can get over here in Idaho.
Yeah.
And so I had one of those, and I was hunting some river bottoms for whitetails, 25-yard shot broadside. And, you know, target shooting all day long at that range.
Mm-hmm.
But in that situation, even though it was just a doe, I did something with my release as far as when I released the arrow. Something was different because my point of impact changed by about a foot, and I hit her a little far back, and I had to back off and give her some time, and she didn't die very far. But, you know, it's all about practice. Same anchor point, putting your eye to the same position on your peephole, holding the bow the same way. It's all about consistency and everything you do with archery.
Right.
And
One technique that I try with practicing my anchor point and really feeling it is to do everything with my eyes closed. So what I'll do is, you know, put my arrow on, and then I'll close my eyes and pull the bow back and feel where my, so I shoot right-handed, so my left hand's on the bow, and then the release is on my right wrist. And so I'll feel everything, and I just kind of use that sense and pull back. I tuck my right pointer finger knuckle right under my ear, and then I just tap my nose to the string, and I should be lined up perfectly through my peep sight. And if I'm not, then I know something's, you know, changed once I, you know, set up my bow that way. And so that's one way that I try to really focus on the muscle memory of anchoring and getting into position before a shot. And then I always, you know, in the moment, in the heat of shooting an animal, I always try to remember that. And I mean, this last year I missed a mule deer at 20 yards, and it was just because I rushed it. I didn't have the right grip onto the bow, and he ran out to 40 yards, stopped, and I was reminded after I missed. I was like, all right, I need to calm down, need to take a breath. And sure enough, got him at 40, but it literally will change everything with the smallest little adjustments that you might not catch if you're not being consistent with your shooting and things that way.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Something I need to do better. I mean, where I live and the house I live in, I have a target, but I don't have like anything behind it. So if I miss, I'll put a hole through my fence. I need to find like, and I want to get like a couple of hay bales. However, I have a dog that would probably just eat the whole thing because she's a weird dog. So, you know, there's a range not too far. I don't know if you've been to it, Aaron. It's over by by Sandy Downs, the racetrack.
No.
I'll have to take you there. Yeah. So there's a range that's the City of Idaho Falls is provided, and it's ranges 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, all the way to 80 yards. All pretty good archery target.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's public use. Anyone can use it, so you don't have to pay anything.
Oh, way cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be nice.
So what's how often do you get to shoot your bow or practice shooting your bow?
On the days that I make it home before the sun goes down from work, I shoot it any day there's sunlight. So today's going to be one of those days.
Now the days are getting longer, huh?
Yep.
So I'm imagining you don't have real bad weather down in southern Utah, like in the middle of the winter time, do you?
No, I mean, I can shoot all winter long. I mean, we maybe get one snowstorm and the snow will last for no longer than 3-4 hours. So
that makes it awesome to practice year round.
Yeah.
We don't have.
Okay. Yeah, all right, Aaron. Nope. There's times that you just bundle up and you just pray you don't have to go outside.
Exactly. That's fun. So give us a this year for, I can't remember if I asked you this or not, but for archery this year, what animals do you want to get with your bow this year? It's coming into the fall.
Yeah, so my goal, if I draw out for an archery deer tag, my goal is just going to be able to get an archery deer, mule deer, and I'm going to try to go for a little bit of a bigger size, caliber of an animal, because I usually just kind of go for meat, and I've still got a little bit of meat from this deer I got last year, and as well as we should have two doe tags, one for me and one for my wife. And she's she's getting into archery. I bought her a bow, so she's excited to give it a shot as well. And then the main goal is to be able to get an elk with my bow this year, and we'll see if I'll be able to get a spike or a cow, or if I decide to hunt any bull open units, I'll go for something a little bigger.
Well, great.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it should be a good year. Good year to fill the freezer and take my wife out. And I know she's just thrilled to be able to shoot something with a bow. She's always been a rifle hunter, but the second I got a bow in her hands, she's been changed her life, and I'm sure she'll only shoot bows for the rest of her life. I was able to get her one of the new Hoyt Hyper Forces, so it's the aluminum version that just came out this year. She's a lefty, so got it left-handed, and it's buckskin color with pretty pink accents. Got to make it a little girly for her.
I think I saw your Instagram story about that. I think.
Yeah, she was excited to get that. She had no idea that I bought that, because I know if she would have seen the price tag before I did, she wouldn't have let me. So some things are better kept a secret for a little bit.
I didn't know this until just recently, but Hoyt is actually based out of Salt Lake.
Salt Lake City. That is correct.
Yeah, they have a manufacturing facility in Salt Lake. And I guess Traeger is as well, Traeger Grills.
Yeah, they are. They're up there in Salt Lake. And
wow.
I was actually fortunate enough, about 2 years ago, I went and toured the Hoyt factory.
Oh, fun.
The offices and everything. And seeing those bows being built, it was when they were building the Pro Defiant that came out last year.
Okay.
And I got to see it beforehand, before it was released. I had to sign like a consent form saying I wouldn't share that information, before they release it.
NDA, right?
Yeah. But it was amazing to see the quality and things that they put into their bows. And
so how did you get hooked up with that deal? Did you win a contest? Did you know some people? How'd you get there?
I actually, one of my dad's friends he works for Zions Bank, and Hoyt was actually one of their, people that they dealt with, one of their
accounts, maybe.
Yeah, one of their accounts. And so my dad put me in touch with one of his buddies, and then I got a number from the head of accounting guy over there at Hoyt. And I just emailed him back and forth. I actually interviewed him for a college class that I had for a business class and things that way. And then he's like, well, anytime you want to come take a tour of the factory, let me know. And so I was like, I'm taking you up. I'll be there this weekend.
Cool.
That's awesome.
So it was awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that they'll basically give anyone a tour if they're asking. And it's totally worth it to take time out of your day to go down there in Salt Lake, and it's kind of out there towards the airport. And yeah, that factory is amazing. It's incredible, the technology that they have for these bows.
Yeah, it's no longer just a stick and string. It's come a long way.
That's right. Yeah, that's there's been a few advancements over the last few years.
Have you guys heard of the, it's a guy out of Northern Idaho. He does this, I can't remember his name exactly right now, but he's documented himself, and he builds his own bows. He builds his own arrows, and, he documents how he hunts. The only ones that I've seen is bear. He hunts black bear up there. And, he just goes through his practice of, you know, this is how I build my bow. This is how I build my arrows. This is how I practice shooting my bow and arrow. It's called Untamed. Have you heard of this, Braxton?
I have actually. Yeah.
Do you remember his name by chance?
I don't. I can't think of it.
I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, I don't know. But I thought that was pretty interesting to see, you know, with all these advancements and all these, you know, technological advancements in the, you know, obviously the compound bow versus a recurve bow versus a, you know, just a regular bow. He's going all the way back into ancient times. And I think it's pretty interesting. It's pretty cool. You know, that's how, you know, we as a human race used to hunt and how we used to provide for others is through, you know, simple string and arrow kind of thing. But
yeah,
so it's cool to see him document it that way.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible thing that he does. I mean, that's a lot of work, a lot of dedication, and lots of time and practice for that.
No kidding.
Yeah. Clay Hayes.
Clay Hayes is his name?
Yeah.
Clay Hayes.
Interesting.
Yeah, he is a hardcore, back in the day, American Indian.
Yeah, that country boy could survive.
Give him a little sagebrush stick and let him build a bow, and I'm sure he'd provide for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Braxton. Well, you know, thanks for joining us for this podcast. You know, we'll continue to follow you and watch your Instagram for obviously you post on your YouTube, but it seems like you're most active on your Instagram. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Right now I'm kind of working on a different video series. I don't know if I'll put it on YouTube or not, but there's another platform that I'll put it on. It's going to be archery for beginners, and it's going to be like a 10 video series to just kind of, if you had never touched a bow before, if you walked into a store, you know, what you should get, what you should do from there, what you should get, what you're looking for, and how you should do things to get into archery. So it's just going to be kind of helping people get into archery and learn the sport, learn the passion, because that's my passion. And that's my goal in life, is just to have that as my career, is archery hunting and teaching people the art of it and helping people, you know, have that same passion that I have.
Braxton, do you believe that there is, like, maybe because I'm just so new to the sport, new to the hunting, you know, I've only been hunting a couple of times. I just recently purchased a bow. Do you think there is, because of the influence of social media or of other factors, do you think there is an increasing amount of interest for archery or in hunting? Or do you think that it's steady, that it's always been this, I guess, popular? Or do you believe there's a difference? If you have, what's your opinion on it?
I absolutely think that there's a growth in the hunting and archery world. I do think that it's always been, you know, archery's always been a pretty big thing, but it's always been kind of quiet. There's never really been those social media platforms where people are able to share and everything back then in the days. But I do think that it has had a big influence from social media to the younger generations, that maybe their, you know, their fathers or grandfathers maybe archery hunted back in the day, and then it slowly just kind of faded as they got older and had to provide for their family with work and didn't have enough time. So I think there is a big growth for that. I kind of discussed that same conversation with the guy at my local archery shop, and he's had a shop here for 15, 20 years. And he says that this year alone is probably one of the better years that he's ever had. Just so many people are getting into it and wanting to learn how to do it. And then there's so many people that, you know, maybe didn't agree with hunting or agree with, you know, eating meat. And there's those influencers out there that really teach you the importance of hunting and conservation and being able to give back to the wildlife as well as maintain the herds. That way it can be, you know, healthy growth. And it's actually, I feel like it's had a big impact with those that didn't agree before. And I mean, I've read and seen stories on, I'm sure you guys know Cameron Haynes. He's one of the big influencers on social media with sharing his passion and, you know, why we do it, why it's important. And I truly feel that it's had a big impact and it's growing. And I think, you know, it's only going to keep growing. It's not going to slow down here in the future. Social media is kind of the new thing, and I think it's just going to keep taking off and people are going to keep sharing. I mean, there's little kids out there, 12, 13, 14 years old, that love hunting, and they're doing an Instagram or a YouTube page and things that way. And I think it's incredible and awesome to see you know, newer generations and younger kids that are getting into this and having it be their passion, something, you know, to something good and positive to have in these younger generations' lives in such different times, you know, these days. But,
you know, you mentioned Cameron Haynes, and he's one of the guys that got me really, he definitely influenced my decision to start archery hunting, him and Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's a great thing. One thing that I also want to use on this podcast or in this platform is conservation. And you mentioned how hunters are conservationists and how, you know, we are doing our part to help preserve herds, to help manage wildlife, to help keep public lands public. And I think that's something that's needed in this day and age. You know, even if you don't hunt, even if you don't go out, and you still need public land to go enjoy the outdoors, you know, enjoy different lakes, different mountains. So it's, you know, as hunters, it's fun to give back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's an awesome cause, you know, giving back to the wildlife. They're able to control the herds and, you know, give food and, you know, create water holes, and then also control, like during shed season, when, you know, shed areas close, when people are out antler gathering, it helps, you know, close those areas so that those animals do have a safe place to winter during, you know, heavy snowstorms and things that way. And it's been a great platform that we're able to, you know, take care of them. It's basically like every public landowner out there has a part in taking care of these animals and making sure that they grow and continue to
repopulate. If you pay taxes, repopulate. You're a public landowner.
Yep. I'm a public landowner. That's right. Yep. Everyone out there is a public landowner. And if you don't want to be, then I guess I apologize and say you probably should be.
There's borders all the way around us that they can go to.
But yeah, I think it's awesome. I mean, there's so much money generated in the hunting community through auctions for a single tag. I mean, there's a mule deer tag that'll go, you know, for a tag in Arizona that will go for $300,000, that just goes straight back into the wildlife.
Have you heard about the Antelope Island mule deer tag?
Yeah, that one is
$400,000.
Yeah.
For one tag.
Incredible. I have no idea how someone has that much money.
That is just insane. And I've seen YouTube videos about it, and they have doll sheep or mountain goats. I don't remember which ones they have there too, but
yeah,
bighorns.
Yeah, they have bighorn sheep.
Yeah,
so have you seen those?
Oh yeah, bighorn sheep, the mule deer herds, buffalo herds.
Yeah, it's Antelope Island. If you've never been out,
yeah,
if you've never been out to Antelope Island, it's worth the trip. That place is just gorgeous. And the herds, you know, like what Jeff was saying, the buffalo, the bison, or the deer, there's even a lot of coyotes. There's those rams and everything. And it's like you're in a whole different country is how you feel over there.
All right, Braxton, we won't take any much more of your time. How about you go ahead and give us your Instagram and your social media so people can follow you.
Yeah, so my Instagram is Haxen Hunt, so that's Haxen, and then Hunt, and I post on there. I try to do it daily, if not every other day, and I do a little bit on Facebook, but my Facebook is basically the exact same as my Instagram, and then I have my YouTube channel where I'll continue to be posting more things on there with archery and hunting and how-to tutorials and informational things. And that YouTube channel is Haxen Hunt as well. And you can go on there, subscribe. I think I just surpassed 100 subscribers.
So nice.
Working on it, getting up there, you know, getting big.
Build an audience. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I mean, anyone that, you know, likes a good story here and there, even if it's about a turkey getting smashed with a chair, whatever, I'll share the comedy stuff and do the serious things and the tutorials, and Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you, Jeff, for having me here, and it was good to finally get on with you, and as well as have Aaron here. It's been a pleasure, and I hope we can do this again, get some more conversations going, and have some more stories. Hopefully, a story here in the future that'll beat the turkey one. But
I don't know if you can get more creative than that.
that's like out of the world story. I can't even believe that. I feel honored to know the kid.
All right, Braxton. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll keep in contact with you.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me, Jeff.
Of course. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. So.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.